This podcast is brought to you by Podcast Nation.
You're listening to the Momwell Podcast. Today, I am excited to welcome author and friendship coach Danielle Byard-Jackson to the show. Danielle has dedicated her career to researching and educating women on the importance of friendship, and her new book, Fighting for Our Friendships, is the result of that research. As soon as I came across Danielle's work, I knew that this is a message moms need to hear. Struggling with friendships and motherhood is something that is so common, it's almost universal. 90% of moms feel isolated or lonely after becoming moms, and 54% feel that they have no friends. After working with so many mom clients and hearing from countless moms in my DMs about these difficulties, unfortunately, I'm not surprised by those statistics. What does surprise me, though, is how little this is talked about on a large scale. It's as if we think we should just know how to navigate friendships even during the huge change that is motherhood. And that if we don't know how to navigate it, we're the problem or we're just being overly sensitive. But I think it's important to remember that all of our needs matter, including our social and relational ones. Today, Danielle and I will unpack why it's so important to prioritize our friendships, why mothers often experience this shift in their friendships, and how to start both reconnecting with old friends and making new ones, even if we struggle with social anxiety. We also talk about the role of technology and how it can both hurt and help our friendships, what to do if our friendships feel one-sided or low quality, and creative ways we can put our friends on the priority list even when we're in the throes of motherhood. But before jumping in, I'd like to take a moment to share a quote from my new book, Releasing the Motherload. You matter, not just as a side accessory to your children, but as a whole human being, one that is many things, only one of which is a mother. I know that we have been conditioned to put ourselves on the back burner. I know that the invisible load is weighing on so many of us, making us feel like we're drowning. And I also know that there is a different way to mother. In my book, I take you on a guide and show you how. To get your copy, head to ericajossa.com, ericajossa.com, or your favorite bookstore or indie bookstore, or it's also available on audiobook, which I personally narrated. Now let's hear my conversation with author and friendship coach Danielle Byard-Jackson. Welcome to the Momwell Podcast, where we're committed to helping you cope with the load of motherhood. I'm your host, registered psychotherapist, and founder of Momwell, Erica Jossa. At Momwell, we know that motherhood is hard, but care shouldn't be. We're committed to providing you with knowledge, tools, and support to navigate the challenges of motherhood. Our mission is to put moms back on the priority list and empower them to create a mental wellness toolbox free from judgment, fear, and shame. On the show, we'll be discussing topics such as postpartum depression, identity loss, the mental load of motherhood, and more. We'll be joined by experts, moms, and professionals who can offer advice, practical tips, relatable stories, and honest conversations. Here at Momwell, we believe that when a mom is well, a baby is well. So join us as we discuss the topics that matter to you with experts who get it. Together, we can redefine motherhood and change the way moms are treated. Danielle, thank you so much for taking the time to join us on the show today.
Oh, of course. I'm so excited to be here and to have this very important conversation.
We were just joking a little bit off air where I get pitched a lot for lots of different books and PR tours and stuff like that. And when yours came through, I was like, this is a topic. Friendships in motherhood and friendships as women, as adults, is challenging. And we feel like we should know, so we don't talk about it very much. And so I was so interested. And then when I was like really doing my deep dive to prep for the interview, I was like, wait a minute, I've seen this lady on my For You page on TikTok. So yeah, I've come across some of your content and admire it and really enjoy it. And just I'm putting two and two together now that we're here with one another. But really excited to be here with you today.
Yeah, I'm excited to chat. And I'm so glad that TikTok introduced you to me. It's so funny because when I started, I was like embarrassed to tell people I was on TikTok. But at this point, you can't hide that. And it's been a really fun journey. Let me say that.
I'm always really curious how one starts to niche down and find themselves with a platform where the book evolved from. You started out as a teacher. It's like, take me on the journey. How did we get to Friendship Coach?
Yeah, so I always joke that, you know, when I'm at parties or gatherings and people inevitably ask, oh, so what do you do? You know, I'm always like, I take a little beat because when you hear Friendship Coach, you know, you're polite, but you're like, girl, is that a real job? And so, you know, this definitely was not something I had on my vision board when I was 10. But I, yeah, started out as a high school English teacher and was teaching 12th graders. But between classes and after school, it was the number one thing they wanted to talk about was friendship stuff. Hmm. And I always joke that I have the pencil eraser marks on my seating chart to prove it. All those requests of like, I don't want to sit by her, and me being like, but I thought you guys were cool. What, you know, what happened? And so I was in the classroom for 6 years. I became the academic chair. So then other teachers in my department were bringing me, hey, we've got the drama in the classroom. And so when I left the classroom and I got into public relations for a little bit, I made the foolish mistake of thinking I was leaving that drama behind, because it wasn't long before I found that even high achieving, charismatic, extroverted women secretly are having their issues with other women. And so long story short, for the past 6 years, I leveraged my education background to study what the research has to say about women's conflict, cooperation, and communication.
It's so interesting, because if we take that even into when I entered new motherhood, the frick, I felt like I was back in high school. It was like people breaking out in wars, in comments, in Facebook groups about what you can and cannot give your baby. And you know, like it just everything was up for scrutiny and like debate, and felt like it was under a microscope. And it's an interesting time. Like I hear a lot from my audience that it's a big shifting moment in their friendships and relationships, because they go from having friends before being a parent and then becoming a parent, and your priorities shift, how you spend your time shifts, your availability, just like calendar, like practically shifts. And some might be in that life stage with you, and you might feel a closeness or like feel seen by them, but others may not. And there's a real gap or lack of being seen and understood that I feel like I hear about a lot, where they feel like some of those relationships expire or just don't like hit in the same way that they used to.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, yeah, motherhood can be really disruptive to our friendships, and it's for a myriad of reasons. I mean, especially if you're a newer mom, you're spending more time in isolation. I mean, sometimes quite literally breastfeeding alone in a room while everyone else is outside. So the hours you're dedicating attached quite literally to your baby, we know that, you know, even cognitively, your brain is like, you know, new mom fog and all those things. But yeah, because a lot of friendships are sustained by spending time together, shared experiences, and now suddenly we find ourselves with fewer hours to give, less cognitive capacity to show up, being burned out, sleep deprived. And now we're grappling with things like, you know, FOMO, when we're scrolling with the baby and we see, oh, everybody's going out without me, or the invitations start to subside and we feel left behind. And so there's a lot going on there. And even as the kids get older, we realize, okay, some of my friendships have shifted. Maybe there are child-free friends who, you know, try as they might, aren't really able to relate to me anymore. And so, you know, it can be disruptive to our friendship landscape, especially if we're unequipped to kind of navigate that.
Mm-hmm. I feel that personally, like coming out of the fog and craziness of having three boys in the span of 3.5 years, like a total of 5 or 6 years of breastfeeding, totally like survival triage parenting mode. And then like backed onto the pandemic, which happened when my youngest was about 1 or so. And I feel like ever since coming out of the pandemic, I have never really gotten a groove back in terms of like socializing. I have a company now. I have different pressures and expectations. I have a whole lot going on, and that is a big part to play in it. But there was like this gap in time that happened in the pandemic for so many people. It's like a window of like 2 to 3 years in some of our friends' lives feel like it has been lost. Mm. So there's like motherhood, then the pandemic on top of that. Everyone feeling very like isolated and lonely. And now reintegrating back into friendships is a weird thing as an adult. Like, how do we do that? Especially for those who might work remotely or they mom from home often. Like, how to even make those friendships. So I know we're going to get into some of that today. Maybe we even start there because we can talk about preserving friendships and keeping them strong and all of that. But if we feel like there is a lack of friendship and we feel isolated or like a lot of those have faded away because of motherhood or pandemic and things, like how do adults make friends, Danielle? It sounds like a very simple question, but it doesn't feel like it is.
Yeah. You know, first, and let me validate, I'm so glad you shared your experience with the pandemic because I know it's reflective of so many people's experience. I mean, the pandemic was hard enough. Being a newish mom or having a new baby, I mean, is rough, right? And, you know, it's consistent with the research, the experience you just shared, that people report not going back to pre-pandemic activities, losing, you know, close friends during that time. They report that they feel like it's more difficult to form friendships post-pandemic. And so we're all kind of experiencing this collective confusion, I guess, about how to get back in there and catch a rhythm. You know, listeners are feeling the same way you are. And they're like, gosh, how do I get things going again? A couple tips for them. One is a mindset thing, and then I'll give you some tangibles. The first is a lot of us have gotten into something called learned loneliness, where you get used to being home. And we start to tell ourselves, you know what, I'm fine. I prefer a night in. And I get it. We're burned out. We're overwhelmed with the kids. But just because something has become normal to us does not make it good for us. And there's way too much research drawing a direct line between the strength of your social support and your physical, emotional, and mental health, mom. So I hear that we're tired, but it's no excuse to no longer interact with other women who can offer the support that we need and to show up for them, right? Yeah. So we've got to get to going. So a couple ways to make that happen. The first is I always like to start by saying, start with who you know. Because a lot of times we use the phrase make new friends and meet new people synonymously, but the two aren't necessarily the same. Who said you have to start from scratch? Are there women in your life who you've been overlooking for whatever reason? Maybe you just haven't entertained her as a friend, or you've convinced yourself that too much time has passed by. You would be surprised at how relieved some women might be to get a text from you that says, hey, I know it's been a while, but you've been on my mind. What's going on? Okay? Because she might feel just as isolated as you are, but a lot of people are scared to initiate. So the first piece of advice is to start with who you know and pick it up. You already have shared history, common interests. The second thing I would say is integrate routine in your life, which I know might be tricky with kids who are unpredictable, but can you walk them in the park around the same time every day? Can you commit to, you know, working from a coffee shop every Friday at 9 for an hour? People are creatures of habit. You're probably going to see the same people out and about. They become what we call familiar strangers. And now it's less intimidating to be like, oh, hey, you know, because I see your face every day or every week. And the reason why I encourage us to do this is because we often romanticize how easy things were when we were in school. Well, it's because we were with the same people all day long. And it lent itself to something known as the mere exposure effect, which means we prefer things simply because they are familiar to us. So why not leverage that in your friend-making journey? How can I make myself consistent, routine, and familiar to other people instead of staying in the house all day and wondering why this isn't happening for me? So routine is a really good way to get in there. Then, of course, there are apps like, you know, Bumble for Friends, which I know is a popular one, where if you do have unconventional hours or crazy erratic availability with the kids, you can swipe. And I'm sorry, we've got to get used to leveraging technology for those kinds of things. It doesn't make you desperate. It makes you resourceful. There are other women on there who are like, hey, new mom, looking for mom friends who understand my lifestyle. They get it. That's what I'm looking for. And they're in your area. You guys link up, go for a walk. Easy breezing and start some friendships there. And the final thing I'll say is leverage the help of super connectors. These are women who thrive on bringing people together. Even if you two aren't close, you probably know one. So what's the harm in reaching out to her to say, hey, you know, I'm trying to get more plugged in, you know, now that I'm getting some time to catch my breath. And I was just wondering, you know, I thought of you because you're always, you know, plugged in doing something cool. And I was wondering, do you know of any events around town worth checking out? Do you know of any groups that you think would be good? But so many of us are scared to make that desire known because of how we might look. But how are you supposed to get your need met if you're too afraid to make the need known? The average person would be flattered that you thought of them to help. So stop relying on your limited knowledge and leverage other people's intel.
All such tangible, practical, helpful things to do. I think Peanut, the app Peanut, is actually a friendship app for moms specifically. And they talk a lot about how moms feel lonely and invisible, and they're sort of trying to counteract that. And one of the conversations that have happened a lot coming out of the pandemic with my friends is like when you get together in person, it's a different vibe. There's like small talk that happens. And there is like when we are in Zoom meetings, it's all business. We're like, we're in, we're out. There's structure. There is time limits. You know what the expectations are. Like the norms are different and they're set differently versus like reintegrating back in after the pandemic. I've had lots of conversations with different people about like losing the art of small talk or just kind of like sitting and being with people, and throw in some anxiety or social anxiety there. And I can imagine that that is a deterrent for a lot of people, like a social anxiety component.
Sure. Yeah. You know, this is a pretty corny analogy, but the same way when you haven't worked out in a really long time and you're like, oh my God, you've got to like push to get that momentum, like lift your butt up off the couch and like, okay, let me just go. And then you can kind of catch your momentum again. It's the same thing with our social skills or muscles, which have probably atrophied during this time. And I got to say, I am sympathetic to social anxiety and I've had my moments, but this sounds so reductive and simplistic, but it really is a matter of getting back out there because you have to show your brain proof that you can do it. Because when we're at home on the screen and we're building it up, oh gosh, I don't know. I don't know. That's so awkward. It's uncomfortable. I don't know what to expect. We're building it up. I have to remind my brain, oh my God, okay, this is manageable. Like it's not that bad. Mm-hmm. Like it's not that hard. But I have to give my brain those experiences and download those experiences to show it, oh, we got this. I'm overthinking it, but I got to put myself in the room. And so, you know, if you are anxious, a couple things to get you back out there, especially with small talk is, I know we kind of roll our eyes at small talk and we think about, oh gosh, all the energy to do this. Small talk leads to big talk. If we want to get in those deeper conversations, this is my way of safely and appropriately engaging with you to feel you out, to see if you'd even be a good conversation partner before I introduce something that's a little bit deeper, right? Mm. And the biggest mistake we make on small talk is we never get out of it. So I'm using small talk to get into a pace that feels rhythmic and easy. But after that, after a couple seconds, I'm going to something else. Mm. You know, so if I'm talking to a mom at a park, I might say like, man, it's so nice to finally have a sunny day. It's been raining all week. And she might say, oh my gosh, I know, right? You know, and then I'm not going to talk about the weather for 20 minutes. That was just my way of opening it and showing them a friendly face, right? So I might say, you know, it's been really hard for us being cooped in the house and it's nice to be outside. You know, were you able to manage in the house with all the rain, or were the kids driving you crazy too? Okay, well, do you have somebody to help you out so you can at least get a break with that? Mm-hmm. You know, so I'm slowly going into that and pacing myself, engaging social cues that she's okay with me kind of going there, but I'm not talking about the weather for 20 minutes. That was just my in. And the last thing I'll say is if you find yourself in a social situation where you're like, oh gosh, I don't know, and you're nervous about what you're saying, is this is easier said than done, but you have to prioritize curiosity over performance. Hmm. If conversation feels to you like something you have to do to impress the woman you're talking to and look like you're smart and have the right things to say, you're not going to be able to relax. You're going to be thinking about like, oh, did that sound dumb? Am I talking too fast? Did I overshare? Because you're trying to perform conversation. But if instead you're able to mentally turn the spotlight onto your conversation partner, oh, I'm so curious about her. Where is she from? How old are her kids? Oh, that's interesting. Oh, she has really great style. I'm going to ask her about that. If you allow yourself to be curious, it flows more freely. And there's research that finds that people who prioritize curiosity over preparing scripts and performing report greater satisfaction with the conversation experience.
Hmm. It's really, really interesting. And I feel like the opportunities that I get right now to do that, just given that I work from home remotely, are like tethered to the kids' activities and things. So like when they go to hockey on the weekends and we're sitting around and chit-chatting about the upcoming tournament, or I join them on their field trips. And now having done this, my oldest is in grade 3 for like a few years now, there's kind of like a pattern of who turns up on these trips. So we kind of know each other there and have sparked some conversations. Our kids are in the same class and there's some common ground there to even spark that small talk because they have the same teacher and they're going through some of the same experiences. So it opens a door up. So I would say that in our day-to-day life, there are opportunities and maybe there aren't, and we need to work hard to like make opportunities. But I would say even in my few limited opportunities, there are some that I could probably do a little better at, like actually aiming to connect with people. When you are busy with little ones, managing finances can seem so stressful. Things like budgeting and remembering to call and cancel old subscriptions often fall through the cracks. But Rocket Money makes things easier for busy moms with too much on their plates. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. You can see all of your subscriptions in one place. And if you see something you don't want, Rocket Money can help you cancel it with just a few taps, which means no more trying to cram phone calls into nap time. Rocket Money even shows you your monthly spending and helps you create a custom budget and stay on track. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of 500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/momwell. That's rocketmoney.com/momwell. rocketmoney.com/momwell. Mealtime with kids can be stressful, but with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals, it can be a lot easier. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. No worrying about ingredients and nutrition, no prep, no mess, and no cooking while wrangling toddlers. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or vegan and veggie. Also discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. Factor can even be tailored to your schedule. Customize your weekly meals with the flexibility to get as much or as little as you need. Pause or reschedule deliveries to suit your lifestyle. Take the stress out of meals with Factor. Head to factormeals.com/momwell50 and use code MOMWELL50 to get 50% off your first box. One of the pieces of your one viral video from last year that I had seen on my For You page that sat with me and I was thinking about in preparation for this interview is like, why prioritize friendships though? Like, it feels like another thing on the to-do list. And sometimes it really can feel like just an added thing, especially when you're like deep, deep in it in parenting. But you talk about like future self and sort of what we imagine in the future. Like, why is this a worthy challenge for us to prioritize, you know?
Yeah, that's such a great question. Because I know sometimes we get to talk about strategies and people need to buy in, you know, to the fundamental premise that friendship is worth prioritizing. So why? And, you know, first I'll start with quick benefits. You know, first of all, if you want to be happy and healthy, and I know this sounds corny, but the longest running study on happiness has been conducted by Harvard over 80 years. They measured all the things, people who have kids, where you live, your income. The number one thing that determined how happy you are and your physical well-being was the quality of your relationships. And people who have relational diversity are happier than people who don't. And what I mean by that is, if it's just you, your husband, and your sister that you talk to all the time, I'm not saying you won't derive any joy from that. But the person who has, you know, husband, sister, mommy group, church friend, happy hour friend, gym friend, neighbor, reports being more satisfied with her life and well-being. And so I totally get how there's the burnout and we're overwhelmed. You're like, I don't have time for that. But to me, when people say I don't have time for it, I do get curious about what they picture when they think about hanging out with friends. Because if your brain is still picturing hours long happy hours, staying out all night, then you're going to continue to say, I don't have time for that. Because in your brain, it's still a grand occasion to do friendship. And we need to update what we know about clocking hours together to be more appropriate to where we are in the season. So maybe hanging out with my friends looks like, I have to go to Target. Come with me and tell me about your date last night. Hey, I've got to walk the baby around the park. Come with me and fill me in on your doctor's appointment. Is everything okay? It's unsexy, but maybe that's what it looks like to spend quality time with you. And so for a lot of us, we haven't even entertained that as a possibility. It doesn't have to be a heavy lift. Hey, come over for 30 minutes. I've got 30 minutes. Let me give you some coffee and download you on last night because it was crazy. Or let's talk about, you know, the new reality show we're obsessed with.
But Love is Blind.
I was just going to say, let's talk about Love is Blind because, girl, I cannot stand Chelsea right now, whatever it is. Okay?
Exactly.
But like, there's so much that we do alone. Why not do that with a friend? Because it does boost our mood. It does lower our cortisol when two women come together. That's your stress hormone. When they come together during times of distress, research tells us. So there's so many benefits to having people show up for you and you showing up for them. No one said it has to be all day. No one says you have to spend a lot of money. But if you want greater longevity and you want to be happier, you are going to have to make time and rethink what it looks like to spend time with other people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So talk to me about the use of technology versus being in person. Yeah. And like, are they synonymous with each other? Like, are we impacted in the same way? Or does research say that there's a difference there? I'm curious your thoughts on that.
You know, so there's actually a lot of research that makes a case for both sides, which is really interesting. So I always take away this is that social media should be supplemental. If it's replacing friendship and it's kind of got you thinking you're staying in touch with friends, but when you think about it, you're like, if I ask you what you know about what's going on in your friend's life and the only things you can report to me are things that I could also see on her feed, not knowing her, that would be a problem. Mm-hmm. So it should be supplemental. You know, it's a godsend for, you know, long distance besties or when you're trapped in the house with the kids and you're like, oh, I need to know what's going on in the outside world. Man, that's helpful. But there's one theory called the rich get richer theory with regard to social media. And just some researchers theorize that people who already have strong social support and social skills, that being on social media is an add for them. But for people who don't have social skills, don't have social support, don't have that in real life, that it's detrimental to be on social media, which I think is interesting. So to some degree, it cannot replace what you need in real life. I need to hear my friends laugh in real time. I need to tell you about my day in a private space that's not meant for social. It's not for my feed. It's for people in my intimate circle. You know, so we need to spend time together to just kind of unfold and relax. You know, for some of us, you know, I'm always going to emphasize, you know, you get whatever friend time you can, whatever that looks like. But some women tell me they're frustrated because, you know, when they do get together, it just becomes like a quick catch up. And you don't have time to even really settle in and let conversation unfold and laugh and bring up other topics without feeling like you're bringing your agenda of the things I've got to update you on since the last time before we can't spend time together anymore. And so, you know, it's just, we've got to be mindful of what do my friendships look like and how much of it depends on social media. If my social media evaporated, would I know what's happening? You know, and it's just, I think, something that everybody's going to have to question and reevaluate their own personal relationship with that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can really relate to the experience of getting together with a friend for dinner and feeling like it's all sort of contextual updates and then not really sinking into the like, but how are you doing part of the conversation? Mm-hmm. And that's often because the actual get-togethers are so sparse. I'm curious your thoughts on like FaceTimes. And so if I'm like folding laundry and I've got you propped up, you know, and we are folding laundry together, FaceTiming, would that feel and fill a need more like an in-person interaction because we're like in real time? Or is it still not quite the same?
Yeah, so it varies. I've seen a couple of things in the research on that, but as close to in real time as possible. So voice notes are helpful because you can hear her voice. It's got more of the human element. I can hear you breathe. I can hear your tone, your laughter. And it's convenient because I can listen to it whenever I get to it, right? But there's something about being as in real time as possible. So the back and forth, and it's happening right now synonymously at the same time. And so, yeah, the folding laundry while you prop up FaceTime, 100%, because that's all we can get right now as moms. And that is a lot better than not doing anything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, definitely having those FaceTimes and making it a friendship ritual, which I know sounds cheesy, but, you know, if we want to embed some consistency into our friendships and we want to remove the mental labor of constantly figuring out, okay, can you do Tuesday at 9 and next week? That's one of the barriers of getting together is because it takes so much mental work to figure that out every week. Mm-hmm. So why not say, hey, on Sunday nights, that's when I do my laundry. Every Sunday at 7, can we FaceTime for 30 minutes while I do laundry? And that's just our thing. it also adds another layer of security to the friendship. Because if I know I'm talking to you every week, you carve that time out for me. My husband knows you got the kids for 30 minutes every Sunday. It's not even a discussion because this is our thing. And it helps to keep us really intimately involved and connected. And so I love the idea of FaceTimes. I like even better consistent FaceTimes and anything we can do to kind of keep that satisfaction in our friendships and to keep a pulse on what's going on in each other's lives.
Mm-hmm. I love the concept of a friendship ritual or like a, you know, agreed upon expectation or something between the two of us. Talk to me about like the quality of friendships. Like if we feel like we are constantly the initiator and we don't have a friend who reciprocates or sort of in the same vein, it feels like it's very like one-sided in one person's content and not another. Like how do we navigate some of those situations?
Yeah. So I would say of like the top three questions I receive, that is probably in the top three.
Okay.
Is I am the initiator. My friends don't reciprocate. So I know that's a big one. A couple quick things. The first is I want to validate that is very frustrating and it can make us feel a little foolish and embarrassed if we're like, man, am I more invested in this than they are? So it's not a good feeling, right? But a couple ways to interact with that. The first is I do want you to think about the ways your friend is contributing to the friendship because a lot of times we do expect her to do it in the way that we do it. So maybe she doesn't initiate or go first. But whenever you do say, hey, do you want to get together? She's like, yes, let's do it. I'll pick you up. The tab's on me. She's an attentive listener. She remembers the things we said like a week ago. She's bringing them up. And that's how she contributes to the friendship. So I just want to throw that out there because I know sometimes we're like, well, she doesn't reach out first. I guess she's not invested, but maybe she is not having it top of mind. I've had women who also fear rejection, even in long-term friendships. So they're scared to reach out. I have a bestie who I reach out a lot and I called her out on it once and she was like, well, you're busier than me. Like you're the one with kids. You're the one with the business. You are always flying around and speaking and all that. So I wait for you to tell me when you can talk and hang out. Mm-hmm. And I thought, oh, okay. I never considered that. So she thinks it would be disruptive on me because I have quote more going on. And it's just, I mean, I believe her. I don't think she's lying. So just, you know, can I give some credit to the ways in which this friend does contribute to the friendship is the first thing to just think about.
It's interesting. So I'll like jump in for a second because as somebody who is neurodivergent with ADHD, there's this very like out of sight, out of mind, like I'm putting out all the little fires day to day. So I'm not always like, oh, I should catch up with so-and-so or I should do this or do that. But get me together. And I'm a freaking trained therapist for crying out loud. I will be the most attentive friend you've ever sat with, right? The lack of initiation on my part, also being busy, having a company, all these things doesn't speak to my like intention or investment in the friendships. And like, yeah, I can just like relate to that. Like, but I will show up all day long. Like, let me know when and where and figure it out and I'll make something work, you know? And not that all of that responsibility should sit on my friends all of the time. And that's something that I need to work on initiating more. But I'll be there 100% when I am there, you know?
Yeah,
versus like having a friend who doesn't initiate, but then also when you show up, all they want to do is like vent about all of their stuff. Right. And it's like one-sided, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. And I love that you shared that to be the voice for the other side, right? Like, hey, here's what's going on. I actually do that myself. And you know what I think we could do to kind of mediate that is for those friends who know that about themselves. Like if you are listening right now and you know, that's me, I don't reach out the way I probably should, to open your mouth and say so. And I don't mean a fuss or make it like overly simplistic, but it would go a long way to say to a friend during your next hangout, hey, by the way, I know I don't reach out as much as I should, but I hope you don't think I'm any less invested. Like when we get together, it's literally the highlight of my week. And I love when we do this.
Mm-hmm.
For some people, that is all they need because they do question a lack of care and investment and commitment when you don't reach out. So for me to verbalize, hey, it's something that I kind of don't do and I'm working on, but I need you to know it is no reflection on how committed I am and invested in it I am and how much fun I have when I'm with you.
Mm-hmm.
And that's all they need to ease their worries. But I mean, we say communication, but that's what that would look like to remove any suspicions that you don't care Okay. So I love that you said that because I know that's a lot of people's experience. So that's awesome. And the other two things I'll say if a woman's in that is, you know, you're able to invite your friend to participate in the way you want. So let's say you guys just got done going to brunch. You're laughing. You're kind of on a high. You might say to her as y'all walk to your car in the parking lot, you might say, man, this was so much fun. And, you know, I was thinking, I know the last couple times we got together, it's because I reached out and I gave an idea of what we should do. But I know you're probably sitting on some ideas of places you want to go and things you want to do. So how about next week? You tell me. Mm-hmm. Call me on Friday and tell me where you want to go next weekend. This is a subtle way of saying, I'm going to need you to show up mm-hmm. in that particular way. You have my permission. I'd love to do that with you. Okay. And then the final thing I'll say is, if you've done all that and you're like, Danielle, no matter what I do, like they just don't initiate and they don't seem interested. In my opinion, you've got two options. You either keep doing what you're doing because they're saying yes, and it's always a good time when you're together, and you find a way to be satisfied with, hey, I tend to reach out, but whenever we get together, it's a good time, and she's a great listener and a great friend. I can accept this. Mm. And you accept it so you can stop being resentful. Or you say, you know what? I think I'm going to pull back because I want something that feels more reciprocal. So I'm going to pull back and I'm going to use that energy on people who are reciprocal and they express platonic desire in the way that I think I need it. Mm. Other than staying suspended in a state of, well, I'm just so angsty about it. And then we're passive aggressive. We're giving one word answers on text. They don't know what they did. So kind of figuring out what do I want to do about that and committing to it can bring us a little more peace. Let me say it like that.
Mom rage often leads us to feeling ashamed, but the truth is that our rage doesn't mean we're bad moms. In fact, anger is a sign from our bodies that our needs aren't being met. As moms and therapists, Dr. Ashiri Naream, Psyched Mommy, and I understand mom rage. We know that we all lose our cool sometimes. And we also know that with the right tools and strategies in place, those moments happen less often. We've teamed up and combined our years of experience to create All the Rage, Raising Kids with Less Anger and More Connection, a course designed to be your go-to resource for preventing and handling your anger. We dive into what causes your anger, how it impacts your body, how to reframe your thinking, and how to stay calm in triggering moments. And because we are all human, we also include strategies for repairing after we inevitably lose our cool. In honor of Maternal Mental Health Week, you can save $20 on the course with promo RAGE20 this week only. Don't miss out on your chance to save and make a positive change. Head to momwell.com/rage and save with code RAGE20. That's momwell.com/rage, code RAGE20. One of the things you also speak about is like sameness or likeness. And mm-hmm. I don't know if there's something here that like if we might misperceive somebody and their actions because they aren't like in full alignment to ours. Can we dig into that a little bit? I don't know if that plays into the reciprocation piece or the not feeling seen and understood by them. But I thought that that was just a really interesting concept when we can't see ourselves necessarily in our friends and their choices.
Yeah. So it's tricky because, you know, we do like homophily, and that's a big sociological term for people who are the same tend to congregate together. And for women, there are specific things that we really do expect to have certain levels of symmetry on. Education is one of them, personality. So they've done research to find what do women value in terms of sameness? How do we expect to be the same? And so if you find that there's been some kind of change or that you like to be the same in a certain way and that's not happening, one, ask yourself how important that is to you. Like if this is really a preference or if that's like a non-negotiable. And being honest, is that something it would be nice if you guys shared this in common, but like you can adapt? Or is it like, I can't deal with this if we're not the same on this? Really getting clear on that. Mm. Also ask yourself if it's something that's like fundamental or an elemental or circumstantial. Like, are there something about our circumstances that have changed and it's temporary or we can work around this? Or do I find she's been adopting some worldviews and behaviors that feel fundamental to who she is and are going to naturally be disruptive to the foundation of our friendship. Like, that's why I'm with you as a friend, is because we share these worldviews and do these things. So kind of getting clear on, can I work around this? Can I not? Could it be adapted if I said something like, hey, you know, we're different on this, or you changed in this way, you know, tell me more about that, and having those conversations. But women do expect to have balance in the areas of self-disclosure and reciprocity. We expect that to be even. And the research does show that women have higher expectations than men do in their close relationships, both romantic and platonic. We expect a lot. But this is only compounded by the fact that we often don't say so, because we believe, you're another woman, I should not have to say that. Like, that should be so obvious. But it's just not fair to expect that in every other context and relationship. You'd have to say what you need and ask questions and figure it out. But in your friendships, you just think that it should just all happen organically because you're friends. So she should know. Is, I don't think, fair or productive. And I'm guilty, but it's something we do. So if we know that we have this tendency, how can we kind of work against that and stay conscious of it?
Yeah. It makes me think about how there's a real romanticized idea about having like our one person, like our person to go to and feel seen and like similar to them. And when I think about the different parts of myself, and I think about my different friends, a core part of my identity is being a therapist. And I have a group of therapist friends who can relate to me on that piece. And then a big part of me is a creator in social media. And I have a ton of creator friends who can relate in that world. And then now, more recently, I'm a founder and CEO of a company. And now I'm breaking into, like, I joke, I'm like, I'm new to the LinkedIn playground. I'm making new friends. Like, I'm new here, you know? But also feeling like I don't have anyone in that world with me. So let's make some friends. And this is probably the first like new, full on new friendships I've had to form in some time. But all of this to say, like, it would be amazing if one person were all of those things to me. But I would say that's an entirely unrealistic expectation. Would you agree?
I would agree with that. And I've definitely adapted my beliefs on that with the more that I've learned. So, you know, when I was younger, yes, I liked the idea of having a bestie. There's something very romantic about that idea. You like having somebody and they're my person and they're my spiritual person and my business person and my, yeah, that's a great idea. I have since learned that people might find more abundance in their friendship landscape if they get all their needs from the collective instead of the singular, and that it might alleviate some pressure in that best friendship. And don't get me wrong, having a bestie is amazing. I have besties, plural, and I mean, what a gift and blessing to my life. I will also say that when you are looking for that one person, I want you to think about how much time you put in, how all your conversations and needs go to this one person, how you sometimes don't know what to do with yourself as she goes with other friends, because that's kind of the main person that you have. So think about like how it affects the ecosystem and the health of the friendship overall to want this person to kind of do all the things with you, and how you might experience more disappointment when she can't. And I'll end with this. There's actually research that finds that people who have emotionships, they call them, are happier. So that means if you have different people to help you regulate various emotions, you report having a greater well-being. So if I have a person who is really my go-to for alleviating sadness, another person for reducing my anxiousness, another person for that, I might have a greater well-being. And I'm wondering if it's because you have a bunch of different sources who are more attuned to help you in different ways. And that is kind of stabilizing, as opposed to constantly going to the same source. And maybe they're gifted in different ways and can't help you meet all the needs. So it's definitely something to consider for the woman who's putting pressure on herself to find her bestie. I wonder how much more satisfaction you'd have if you kind of pull back a little bit and see how many options you have and what a gift that you have so many different people you can go to for different things.
Yeah, it puts a lot of eggs in that basket. And if something shifts, or if we grow apart or change or evolve, like there is like a like anxiety or pit in my stomach, I start to think about or feel like an abandonment or like a breakup, or like it starts to become so tethered. And I don't know, it's all wrapped up in one person, Whereas as you're describing like these emotion shifts, like I think about, I go to my one friend, psyched mummy, Dr. Asherina Reem. We commiserate about the toxic relationship we're in with Instagram and the algorithm. And then we like, I'll go here to talk about, you know, some of the challenges of being a therapist or, you know, running that business and the things. So to me, it is the ability to like feel seen mm-hmm. in that part of my identity or role. And it doesn't have to be by one person. It's just having a person who can see and be in that part of myself with me. I don't know how else to quite describe it. And I don't know. It feels okay that they are separate people. It feels like a little bit more work maybe. If I wanted to like deepen those, I'd probably have to be a little bit more selective in like how I spread my time out. Like I don't think all of those would be as deep as the others, but it also feels good to have that community or support system.
Yeah, I love that. And, you know, psychologists refer to it as social identity support. So the various aspects of your intersectional identity, you know, I'm a mother, I'm a business owner, I'm a creative, I'm on social media, you know, and having people who can reflect back to you the way you see yourself. And not necessarily that they are that thing too, but that they can affirm it in you. To put that as an example, you know, when I became a mother, I have friends who maybe are child free, but they get me being a mom. They don't try to reduce it, right? So it's hard when you're talking to a child free friend and they're like, oh, I don't know, like if you say I'm so tired and they kind of reduce it, well, I'm tired too. But, you know, so, or she's like, I know you're a mom, but like, can't you just bring the baby and let's just go? So you're going to start to be like, okay, she doesn't understand. She doesn't understand who I am and what this role requires of me. So having child-free friends who do understand and they see who you are, they see that mother in you, is still affirming even if they're not mothers. And then, you know, to the next level, yes, it's helpful to have other moms because now we're using like this shorthand language. I can just, oh my gosh, oh girl, I get it, me too. You know, or they give me access to specific resources that I need in this role that my child-free friend just wouldn't know, you know? So, you know, even just not just emotional support, but like just access to resources, which I hope doesn't sound transactional, but I mean, yes, one benefit of social connections is it helps me to be equipped with the resources I need to thrive. And that's just what it is. And so for people who have that kind of texture in their social network, I mean, just naturally by extension, one natural byproduct is being supported with everything you need.
Yeah, which is so critically important to our well-being, especially in the postpartum period. And I think that I've spoken with a lot of people who expect a village to show up and that it's crickets in terms of support. That's where I think that that future self video that you talk about is so important also, because if we haven't been sowing those seeds and maintaining some of those support systems when we need to draw on them in some kind of way, or we envision, you know, collectively having this group of girlfriends to travel with in our 50s when our kids are off at college or like whatever, if we haven't taken the steps to maintain that part of our life, that's not going to be there always when we need it. And I know that a lot of people listening, we've done a few episodes on feeling like that village just doesn't show up. It's intentional work is what I'm understanding and hearing, right? Like it doesn't just happen. We've got to prioritize that and keep those friendships going.
Absolutely. Yes, it's definitely something you have to maintain. That's why when people are like, oh, I don't have time for it. Well, then those friendships fade out. And then when we are in crisis, we're like, oh my gosh, I don't have friends. I haven't been talking to anybody for years. You know, so it's just something that I'm constantly being a connector, investing in those connections. I'm active. I'm intentional, like with anything else. The same way we're like, well, you know, you need to have date nights with your boo planned, you know, and we're like, you know what? Yeah, we got to be better about that. Why are we not doing the same thing with friendships? Hey, this is my time. I need girl time, babe. And so I'll see you when I'm back. And hopefully you have that support. Because if I'm being honest, I recognize what a privilege it is to have an invested understanding partner.
Right.
Because if I'm being real with you, I've met a lot of women who they don't have that support in the home, which impacts their friendships because you have, I'm going to tread lightly here, you have an environment where you are expected to do all the things and the other person feels not equipped or responsible for, well, that's naturally going to impact your friendships because this person doesn't see value and you go in and having that time so you can come back recharged, right? So it helps to have a supportive village, let me say it like that, who also sees the value of you getting recharged and refreshed and encouraged by other women. and helping you make that happen for yourself. And the last thing I'll say too, or two things for the woman you just described who feels like, I don't have that support. People didn't show up for me. Two things. Hmm. One is if you're not finding it from your friends, you can also find it from community. And I kind of use those things kind of differently because friends are people who've raised their hand to say, I elect to be in this reciprocal, active relationship with you, with trust and understanding. But then there's community who maybe we don't have that depth, but we have like this shared habitat or shared interest. So those mommy groups, I know I went to them when I had my first kid. My husband was like, I think you need to go find some people who can help. And I was like, I'm not going to those weird mommy groups. And they saved my life, mm-hmm. you know, helped me with breastfeeding, or I was there to cry and didn't feel embarrassed because they were crying too. And then I could wipe my face and leave and I didn't have to see them for another week. They didn't know my business, you know, so it was nice to be in that community of mothers. And this is just the shared experience that's bringing us together. And that's the extent of it mm-hmm. is what it is. And then I leave, you know, so if you feel disappointed in your friends not being able to show up in certain ways, are you also in community and other things that aren't necessarily friendships, but still supportive groups that understand a specific aspect of your life and identity? And the last thing I'll say here is we can point to other people all day long. My friends didn't show up, my community, and that's always disappointing. I also am curious about how you are expressing your needs, because if you're assuming they ought to know, or when people ask, hey, are you good? Can I come over to help? Oh, no, we're good. No, thank you so much, but we're okay.
Right.
Then you are going to consistently feel like they don't show up. But I'm telling you, I don't need it. I got it. I never create a moment for myself to share because I feel like I take up too much space. So I'm not going to even offer up, hey, actually, I've been kind of struggling. Do you mind popping over next week? Or do you have some time to talk? I think I need to just vent to somebody. But I think I'm taking up too much space and I don't want to inconvenience you. So I'm not going to even bring it up. So what role do we play in feeling unknown and unsupportive? And what things are in our control to help get our needs met?
Mm-hmm. So important. So important. Oh my gosh. I feel like I could go into a whole episode on that one. I'm going to rein myself in because I know that we're almost out of time. But I'm just thinking about leaving people with a couple of creative, like friendship rituals they might be able to do or embark on. Or if you have a creative one, one that I think about is like live chatting, and it's even just texting like coworkers and friends, like on Love is Blind nights, we are all in that chat and we are like, okay, what episode are you on? Because I don't want to spoil it for you, but you need to see this gong show that just played out. Like it was like horrific, or, you know, so that is a creative way that I can still like enjoy my time, but feel with and connected with somebody. I'm curious if you have a couple other creative ways for those rituals.
I love that so much, by the way. I call those limited series. Like whenever there's a show or a book you've been wanting to read, inviting a friend to do it with you. I call it like, join me on this limited series, meaning it's not a forever thing, but let's read through this book together or this audiobook. And in 2 weeks, let's meet up to talk about it. And then it's over, but it's something fun to look forward to. And even when we're not together, we're doing something together. So if I'm watching the show and you're not watching it with me, we're still doing it together. So when I'm watching, I'm thinking like, oh my God, I cannot wait to see what she has to say about this. I know she's got, you know, some opinions, but I'm doing this experience with you. And the research does show that when we do things with other people, we report enjoying it even more. We're just designed for connection. So all those things you're doing on your own, ask yourself, okay, how can I socialize this by just one degree? Just by one degree, how can I bring somebody else in on the experience? So I love those reality TV group chats. That's so great. So yeah, so that would be great, right? Another would be, you know, those standard, you know, FaceTime. So every Friday, I know one friend group who has a group chat. And because group chats can get chaotic, the rule of their group chat is you just drop in one picture with no context every day. That's all we do every day. And I'm like, I love that so much because that feels like an easy lift, right? To just be like, here's a picture. Maybe it's funny. Maybe it's serious. Maybe it's like weird. But that's how they stay in touch and keep a pulse. Everybody showed up every day, just one picture to say, you're here, you're alive. And that's how they keep things going, you know, and I'm sure they're doing other things between that, you know, little rituals, like every time a milestone happens in your life. So it doesn't have to be around a show or a weekday, but hey, every time XYZ happens, we meet up and we go celebrate with, I don't know, whatever it is that you celebrate with. But whenever a certain milestone happens, that's just our thing. So you guys can make it what you want. You have the freedom to negotiate. What is it going to look like to check in with each other? And it also kind of helps to bring you closer to know that you kind of have your thing that you don't share with anybody else. It's really nice. And so, you know, I encourage you to get creative around what that can look like. That doesn't require a long commute, a lot of money, a lot of time, just to keep you in touch and keep you kind of tethered to one another and anchored. And so get creative with it, be consistent with it, try not to break it. That's kind of the whole point. But it's just another way to show friends, you're top of mind for me. And this is something I have that's special with you and you matter to me. And that's a nonverbal way of demonstrating commitment. And people really respect that and it tends to bring you closer.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much for that. Thank you for today. All such tangible, helpful takeaways in an area that I know so many of us struggle, especially as we're adjusting and finding our footing in our new role. You, my friend, have a book coming out on this topic. Where can people either pre-order, get the book? Where can they learn more from you?
Yeah, so the book is titled Fighting for Our Friendships, and the whole goal of it is just to help us keep friendships going to the best that we can. And sometimes, yes, they expire. That's just the nature of relationships. But what could we be doing as women to keep them going? And I share a lot of research on women's friendships specifically. And so all of that information lives at betterfemalefriendships.com. And I really look forward to seeing everybody over there.
Yeah, we'll link that in the show notes and the title of your book and where they can buy that as well. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us today. This was incredibly valuable. Appreciate you being here.
Thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
I absolutely loved hearing these practical tips that Danielle shared on ways that we can start to prioritize our friendships. It's so easy to let the relationships in our lives slip by, saying that we'll catch up eventually or that there will be time later. The internet is even full of memes and images of moms saying that this just isn't their season to spend time with their friends or focus on themselves. I really believe that needs to change. We need to stop viewing taking care of ourselves or finding fulfillment in more than just our motherhood role as being selfish. And when we think about our emotional health, our social needs, and our future selves that we are trying to create something of value for, it's clear that taking time for our friendships isn't something that we should put off. It's an essential part of our well-being. And my big takeaway from today's episode is that it doesn't have to be a big ordeal that requires more mental labor. It doesn't have to be an outing that requires babysitters or a weekend getaway, although you shouldn't feel guilty for doing those things. And if you have the capacity for it, then by all means, go for it. But it's the simple routines that can be the most meaningful. Whether it's live texting about Love is Blind with your reality TV loving coworkers, or FaceTiming another mom friend while you both fold laundry. I hope that each of you out there took that message to heart and can find a way to prioritize your own needs, including the need for friendship in some small way. I've been applying this to my own life since this episode and have set up some friendship rituals that allow for these connections to be built into my routine so that I don't have to add it as another thing on the list to do. I would love to hear what you thought about this episode or any comments or questions or things you want to explore about friendship in motherhood. Send me a DM to let me know if this is a topic you'd like to hear more about. If you really enjoyed this episode, take a moment to leave a review. And if you have a mom friend who you used to be close with and would like to reconnect with, or you want to make time for, but you just haven't found a way, send this episode their way and use it as a starting point for how you can work together to commit some quality time. And if you're having trouble wrapping your mind around allowing yourself time to engage in your friendships, or if you're experiencing anxiety at the thought, know that working with a mom therapist can help. Book a free 15-minute virtual consultation at momwell.com/booking. That's momwell.com/booking. I'll see you right back here, same time, same place next week, where I'm being joined by Dr. Cindy Hovington to discuss how to break the yelling and shame cycle. You don't want to miss it. I'll see you right back here next week. I can't even begin to tell you how happy and honored I am that you choose to spend your time here with me each week. If you're looking for resources or links from today's show, or you need a refresh on anything we've talked about, visit our show notes. You can find the link in the episode description, or you can head directly to momwell.com/learningcenter. To join the Momwell email list and be the first one to know about new episode drops, insider info, or freebies, head to momwell.com/newsletter. Join me next week. Until then, remember that you have to be well to Momwell.